The House Armed Services Committee will take another crack at defense acquisition reform. Committee Chairman Buck McKeon chooses Vice Chairman Mac Thornberry to lead a new panel on defense acquisition reform. Experts on that subject gave the committee some guidance on how to proceed this week. One of the witnesses was Dov Zakheim, former Undersecretary of Defense Comptroller and now a senior advisor for the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Dov Zakheim says a new approach to defense acquisition reform has the potential for new results, but the old approach definitely won't work this time around.
The way we've been trying to do it, which is essentially focusing on specific issues with legislation, addressing them, or process improvements, is just not the way to go. It clearly hasn't worked. I mentioned when I testified that I had come across, when I first came to this town in 1975, a series of hearings by the Senate Government Affairs Committee, as it was then called, which included one on acquisition reform. So here we are, well over 35 years later, still grappling with the same problem. I believe that the fundamental issue revolves around personnel. If you don't have an educated consumer, you're just not going to buy the right things.
Is it the same problem, though, or is it just in the same area? Because at that time, the overwhelming majority of what the Pentagon bought was goods. Now it's services. Do the same theories apply, the same specifications apply, and so on? Or is because of the nature of the stuff that the Pentagon's acquiring now, has that changed the game?
I think it's made it even more imperative to get the right people in. When you talk about goods, clearly our people, by definition, are simply not up to speed with the state of the art. There's nothing for the civilian side that requires them to get any kind of technical recertification. They can go to the Defense Acquisition University and maybe take online courses, but that's not the same thing as getting up to speed with aeronautical engineering or computer science or IT or physics or whatever, which is what, by the way, doctors do, for example. So on the hardware side, I don't believe our people are simply educated enough, and they have to rely on contractors. Now, relying on the contractors, which are a different group than are the ones that are actually building this stuff, these are the services contractors. And you have a whole lot of problems there because it's not so much knowledge of the substance, but it is knowledge of how to manage these kinds of contracts, how to write them up, how to oversee them, how to ensure that there's accountability for those who do oversee them. Very similar to the kinds of problems that I encountered when I was on the Commission on Wartime Contracting. And again, what we're finding is, at least what I found, is that people rely far too heavily on services contractors, even for managing that. And so you get tangled up in all kinds of questions like what is inherently governmental and should contractors be essentially advising program managers to go in one direction as opposed to another? Is that inherently governmental? So, again, the educational part is different in the sense that you need a different kind of education, but you still need the education.
You write, invariably the arrival of a new senior official on the DOD scene leads to a new effort to fix, and you have fixing quotes, the acquisition system. Everybody agrees that it's a problem, and everybody agrees that reform is necessary, but no attempts over the 35 or 40-year period that we're talking about here seems to have stuck. Is there something that we're doing wrong in the way that we try to conduct the reform, or is it just the reform techniques that we're applying aren't working?
Well, I sort of addressed the reform techniques, but the way we apply the reform clearly is a problem. And this is in part because, to some extent, it's a partisan issue, but not really. It's not that we get different people from different parties coming in and overthrowing whatever their predecessors did. It's that we get different people, regardless of party, who essentially start over with new buzzwords, with new concepts, with new processes, with new organization charts. And what that does is essentially create an extremely cynical bureaucracy that simply waits the new guy out and, in the meantime, mouths all the buzzwords and attends all the new meetings with new titles and new names for the meetings and just goes its merry way. one of the ways to reform this process is, first of all, to ensure that you really do have bipartisan cooperation. And I have to say that when I testified before the HASC, I got a real sense that Chairman McKeon and Ranking Member Smith and Mr. Thornberry, who's going to be heading this up for the HASC, all really see the issue in similar ways. They really are approaching it in a bipartisan manner. But that is not enough either. You've got to have consistency. You've got to have the new guy coming in and saying, I'm running with the same ball that the old guy had. In other words, it becomes a handoff, and you don't drop the ball and start all over and go, you know, the other direction, the other end zone. In addition to that, I would argue that what you need not only is consistency at the undersecretary for acquisition level, which is really what I've been talking about, you need consistency at the deputy secretary level. And, in fact, you need a deputy secretary that really is understanding of, with experience of, top-level management. Ash Carter was an extremely effective deputy secretary, but to me he's the exception that proves the rule. Somebody who did not have that kind of background before he came back to the Pentagon and yet was able to become a quick study, a good listener, and a good manager. But that's the exception. What you need are people who have a minimum of 10 years of industry experience at senior levels, who know how to manage, and who will enforce the rules and force accountability. Once you get that, both the bureaucracy and industry are going to respond.
Dove Zakheim of the Center for Strategic and International Studies. That's kind of contrary, Dove, to what the administration put in place policy-wise, though, when they talked about who they were going to choose for these positions. They had a real aversion to people who had a lot of long-time ties and experience in industry.
And they're seriously mistaken. If you want to put a premium on ignorance, then that's fine, but then don't expect reform.
You told the committee that OPM should grant the agency a lot more flexibility in hiring and developing top-notch acquisition officials. What does that flexibility look like, and what does the Defense Department need from OPM that they don't have now?
Well, for example, people I've spoken to in DOD have made it very clear that they would like specific educational standards. Right now, that isn't always the case. It's the case for some categories of professions, but not all. And that's in part because OPM is still functioning as it functioned for the last 30 years or more. You need to be able to have specific requirements, education requirements. You need to be able to advertise for those. Right now, you say higher degrees recommended. Well, if you have somebody who wants to hire their best friend and their best friend doesn't have a higher degree and their best friend is one of the last three standing, which invariably they are, then they just hire their best friend, degree or no degree. If, on the other hand, it was required as opposed to recommended that they had a higher degree, that would be a different story, and you would hire the person with more knowledge and probably more recent knowledge. So that's one thing they could do. Another thing they could do is create a system very similar to the military system where you simply cannot move up the chain to field grade officer and to general officer or flag officer without having the requisite professional military education. Well, in the case of our civilians, you can become a GS-14 without necessarily getting some more technical expertise. Again, you might take some courses at the Defense Acquisition University, and they might be online, and you might be doing them at home, and the baby may be crying, and your wife tells you, well, you better go to see the baby, so you interrupt what you're doing. I don't know how you absorb a lot of material that way with those kinds of distractions, which people will have. It's natural. So there's a limit to what you can do with distance learning. There's a limit to what you can do with technical education. And just as the military insists that you go to war college, that you go to command and staff school, that is the kind of insistence that OPM needs to build into, literally to burn into their program their personnel requirements, so that if somebody wants to move up to GS-14, they have to take some time off, maybe 6 months, maybe not a year, but a significant time off to get up to speed. And again, if you want to become a senior manager, SES, you need to take that year off. It shouldn't be optional. It shouldn't be recommended. It should be required. If you look at how the joint staff improved by leaps and bounds Once, for example, they were told they had to not only get advanced education, but also spend time in what's called purple, in joint service, so that you couldn't just, say, be in one of the services and then, you know, move all the way up. But you couldn't, you had to do some joint service to become a flag or general officer. The joint staff improved tremendously. Everybody wanted to go there. We ought to insist on that. We ought to insist on people spending time in industry.
In your testimony, a couple of different places, Dove, you referenced the Secretary of Defense Fellows and advocated an increase of that, making it five times larger. What is it that they're doing well, that program does well, that you would like to see scaled that way?
Well, they have, I think, about 20 people. I think they're almost all military officers. They may all be military. I don't recall offhand. Overwhelmingly military. And these folks will go to major corporations, not just defense contractors, but major corporations, to see how industry works, how industry plans, how industry buys, how industry thinks. They learn about logistics chains, whatever the relevant industry is. Well, once you're sitting on the other side of that table, and then you come back to the Pentagon, you have a much surer, sounder sense of what it is industry does, what are industry's challenges, and what are the kinds of things you should be doing on behalf of the government to get the optimum response from industry. And I'm simply arguing that if we had 5 times or 100 civilians a year doing the same thing, we would have a much, not only a better educated acquisition corps, we'd have an acquisition corps that would understand exactly how to put together programs that are feasible, manageable, and that actually can run on time and within cost and budget.
The overall tenor that I get from your testimony, from both watching it and reading it, is you are still optimistic that this is a process that can be fixed. There is still hope here. This is not something that's necessarily bound to be mired in the kinds of problems that it is today.
We cannot afford not to fix it. Norm Augustine said years ago, if we keep going the way we're going, we'll be down to one tank, one ship, one airplane. Take a look at how many planes we produce now relative to how many we produced when that first hearing that I mentioned took place. Take a look at how many ships we now have per year as opposed to how many we were able to purchase then. We don't even build tanks. So there's nothing to talk about there. The point is, we cannot go on this way. We're an innovative people. We can figure this out. We just have to try to do something different.